The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Gary White, the co-founder and CEO of Water.org, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving, on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
Some of you, in fact, I hope most of you, may remember a spot during the Super Bowl featuring Matt Damon. The message was that if you purchased a Stella Artois beer or a limited edition chalice, you could help provide clean drinking water to a person in the developing world. The organization behind that effort is Water.org, and Matt Damon's partner in this social enterprise is Gary White, its CEO and co-founder, who is with us now. Good evening, Gary, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
Thank you, Denver.
Before we get into the specifics of the work that your organization does, provide our listeners with the dimensions of the problem. How many people in the world do not have access to clean drinking water or sanitation facilities?
It is. It's a huge problem. It's about 884 million of us don't have access to water. About 2.3 billion of us don't have access to sanitation. And we can get that at a visceral level, but what it means is things like, you know, this year, 443 million school days will be lost because kids are walking to get water. Every day, women spend about 250 million hours walking to collect water because they don't have it nearby. They have to go to a stream or a river. And that's time they could spend, you know, earning income for their family or growing food. And every 90 seconds, we lose a child because of water-related disease. So it's those big numbers boil down into real human suffering and really holding people back from developing their full potential.
Have anybody ever been able to put a number to the coping costs of what it means not to have clean water or sanitation facilities?
Sure. Those costs come in the form of that time spent collecting water, come in the form of people who live in urban slums paying water vendors that sell water from water trucks, often of dubious quality. The time that people spend going and trying to find a place to defecate because sanitation is a big part of this. So all that rolls up into about $300 billion every year that people pay in these coping costs because they don't have access to water at a faucet at their home or a toilet in their home.
Gary, how severe is the water shortage in the world right now? And for instance, Cape Town, South Africa is running out of water. I think they refer to it as day zero, and that day is going to be sometime in April. So whether it's climate change or whatever, is there enough clean drinking water for all 7 billion plus people inhabiting the earth?
Yeah, there's plenty of water on the planet to satisfy the needs of everyone and far more. The question is, you know, where is that water relative to where people live? And how clean is that water, and what does it cost to treat the water, to clean it up so that it is of drinking water quality? And I think that you know, when we look at this problem, you know, today everyone woke up and got water somewhere, right? And they went someplace to defecate. The question becomes, you know, how much time did they have to spend walking to collect that water? Or if they paying these water vendors, how much of their cash, and sometimes it's up to 25% of their income to purchase water from vendors, and then what's the quality of that water? And so those are the things that come together. So there's water everywhere, but the question is, how much do people have to pay in terms of the time and their health to get access to it?
Yeah, and you mentioned a moment ago about walking to get water. This truly is a women's problem, correct? I mean, they basically, literally and figuratively, carry the burden on this.
Absolutely. It's women and usually girls that are walking to collect water because, you know, if you don't get water today, nothing else matters. So everything gets subjugated to getting water for the family. And so that's the question. Sometimes you have to spend, you know, an hour walking to a stream to get it. Sometimes during the dry season when that's dried up, maybe you have to walk 2 or 3 hours. And that's part of the whole problem, too. People don't have consistency with respect to where they're getting their water every day. And if you don't have that, you can't go out and work at a paying job, for instance, because you can't show up on time. And so this whole crisis and what it means for families, it underpins everything in terms of building a better life for your family, building the health of your family, and building the economy of your community.
Yeah. And I don't think people realize what you just mentioned a moment ago is that people actually pay for water and they pay some pretty significant rates to get that. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and how that provided you with your aha moment in creating the model for water.org.
Yeah, I think that I've been doing this a long time, ever since I was an undergraduate, you know, in college, and always trying to find new insights into how we can do this better and serve more people. And what I discovered was that people were paying, you know, 7 to 10 times more for water from these vendors than if they had a connection to the public utility, right? So the subsidies that go into the system usually subsidize the people who already have faucets in their homes and, you know, the middle class and so on. And so what we saw was that, you know, people who were living in the greatest poverty were actually having to go to water vendors in order to get their water.
It's very expensive to be poor, isn't it?
It's extremely expensive to be poor. That's a great way of putting it. And so what we saw was, like, how about if we could get people access to a loan, a small loan, so that they could pay the connection fee? Because what's holding them back, the barrier between them and safe water, is this fee that they need to pay to connect to the public utility. That can be $200 to $300. So they might have a dollar every day or $2 every day to pay a water vendor, but they don't have $300 all up front. And so what we said is, like, why can't we get them access to microloans so that they can get over that hump and get the connection, and then their expenditures go way down.
So it's access to affordable capital. That's at the heart of it. Yeah. So how do you do this? I mean, do you do it yourselves through water.org, or have you created a network of microcredit institutions that you partner with?
Yeah. So we didn't want to reinvent the wheel and become a bank at water.org. And so what we knew was that there was this extensive microfinance network out there in the world. And so we piggybacked onto microfinance to kind of get them nudged towards making loans for water and sanitation. And I think what you see, it took quite a nudge to make that happen because they're used to making loans for sewing machines or cows and things like that, and where you can see that people could start having a cash flow to repay their loan after a week, right? And people in the microfinance industry didn't understand these coping costs and how much the poor were paying for water. And so what we can do is help them buy back their time with this approach. They can use that time to earn an income, and they can use the income to repay the microfinance loan. And so we've done this now. We've made over 2 million loans through our partner network. And depending on the country, those are repaid at between 97 and 99%. And over 80% of the borrowers are women.
Fantastic.
So this is having quite an impact so far.
Where do you get this capital to begin with?
So we at water.org raise philanthropic capital to be able to help cover the startup costs for these microfinance institutions. We help them do the market research. We help them hire the right staff so that they can still start making these loans. So we use that philanthropic capital to basically get this ready for investment capital to fund the actual loans that go out to poor households. And we created a spinoff called Water Equity that now raises social impact capital. It provides a financial return to investors, but it also provides this huge social return. So, for instance, an investor that invests $1 million in our fund that lasts for 7 years, that $1 million will help someone, it will help 100,000 people get access to water over the course of that time. And each year along the way, the investor will get a distribution. We target about 2 to 3%. And at the end of the 7 years, they get their $1 million back. Hmm. So it's a way of bringing more capital into the system, because the thing about this, Denver, is that the problem actually contains its own solution.
Yeah, it does.
When you look at that $300 billion in coping cost, that's money that's already there. And if we can use our access to capital for the poor to redirect some of those expenditures, then they're going to get water, they're going to have a lower water tariff, and they're going to pay off their loan after 2 years, and they're going to be free and clear.
And your first fund raised $11 million, $11 million, and now on your way to a $50 million second fund, of which you're about three quarters of the way there. What kind of rate of return are your investors getting? You said they're getting their capital back. Do they get a little bit more than that?
Yeah. So on the first fund that we did, we paid our first distribution last year, and we paid 3.6%
Very nice.
On that. So that's an annual annual distribution, and we anticipate the same on this next fund.
How many people have you been able to help through this process?
So we have just recently crossed over 10 million people that we've helped get access to water or sanitation, and the momentum is building. Before we had the water credit approach with microfinance, we were a more traditional water NGO helping get wells drilled and systems built. And, you know, from 1990 up until 2012, it took us that long to reach our first million people.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're reaching more than 4 million people every year because of the multiplier effect of adding credit to the mix.
How much money do you think it's going to take to address this problem?
Well, it's going to take, if we want to meet the Sustainable Development Goal number 6, which is safe water and sanitation for everybody, we're going to have to invest about $1 trillion.
Okay.
And I think that's part of this, why we drove in the direction of helping people with finance, because if you add up, you know, all of the funds that go into water philanthropy and water aid, it's about $8 billion a year. And if you need $1 trillion, it's going to take a long time to get there.
A long time.
So, mm-hmm.
What do you see as the role of government in these emerging nations, and have you partnered with any mm-hmm. of them in any particular fashion?
So we have partnered with governments, and we do it at different levels. One is that, you know, water supply, particularly in urban areas, is really a natural monopoly where it's really more efficient to have one utility providing water rather than a lot of, you know, fragmented water solutions. And so we work with them to hopefully extend the network of pipes into the poorer neighborhoods. And so they are responsible for that, but they also need paying customers to make mm-hmm. the utility work. And so what we do then is help deliver those customers and collaborate with government to make the utilities more efficient and more effective, because they can now start collecting these water tariffs and these connection fees. I was just in the Philippines recently, and, you know, where we're working with the utilities and microfinance there. And I think there's a really great example of how we need to do more of this, because I met a woman there who, before she had her water credit loan, she was paying about $60 a month to these water vendors.
Mm-hmm.
And she took out a loan, and now her water tariff is about $4.50 a month, and her loan payment's about $5 a month. So right there, she went from paying $50 or $60 a month down to 10. After she pays her loan off, she'll be paying $5 a month. So you can see right there why people want these loans so much. But right next to her in this conversation was her neighbor, who wanted to do this desperately, but the utility hadn't extended the pipes yet to mm-hmm. her home. And so that's why we need to work with the utilities to help them understand if they invest in that infrastructure, these paying customers will show up.
There are indeed some very good customers at the base mm-hmm. of the pyramid, aren't mm-hmm. there?
Yes.
Let me turn to your organization for a minute. How did you and Matt Damon first connect to join forces to start water.org back in 2009?
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt had started with some other folks an organization called H2O Africa, and was really moved by the need that he saw in terms of water supply and other issues of poverty. And so that organization was going along great. And of course, you know, I'd co-founded Water Partners back mm-hmm. in 1990. And we got introduced, and, you know, Matt and his team were in the early stages, so they were doing really well at raising funds and raising awareness, and they had a great platform. And what we were kind of like the heads down kind of wonky engineers that knew how to get stuff done on the ground. And so as we got to know each other, you know, H2O Africa was basically investing their funds through us to go get the work done. And so Matt and I got comfortable with each other. It's like, you know, there is a real symmetry here. Maybe we should just bring the organizations together. And so, you know, we worked on that. And then we merged in 2009 and rebranded as water.org, which was the URL we already had.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never looked back.
Worked out quite nicely. You really mm-hmm. complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, water.org is very much of a bottoms-up organization. When you go into a country, you're more likely to address the poor, be with them, see what their problems are in accessing water, as opposed to, let's say, setting up a meeting with the Minister of Health.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that approach has impacted how you go about your work?
Yeah, that's a really great insight, Denver. It really is a bottom-up approach. I mean, what we've done is say, you know, and I consider us as much an innovation organization as a water organization.
Mm-hmm.
And when we say, what are the barriers that are standing between people and safe water? And, you know, initially we thought that was pumps and wells, and that is part of it. But what we saw was that really hundreds of millions of people could get access to safe water if they just got access to affordable capital. So the bottom-up approach is like people know, like the woman in the Philippines, she mm-hmm. knows that if the pipes came closer to her home, she would be able to pay the fee. She would have water. Boom, done. And so what we saw was that so many people knew exactly how they wanted to improve their water and sanitation. They just lacked the capital to do so. And that's the bottom-up approach. Like that's the barrier that we saw. So let's take away that barrier of affordable finance so that they can get the solutions that they need. And so that has allowed us to really accelerate and reach more people because we take people's, you know, donations now and multiply them. So we've put about $21 million into getting water credit jump-started in different countries around the world. That's now raised over $700 million in investment capital that actually makes those loans to the poor households. So that bottom-up approach has potential to really scale.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're really not just going to the bottoms up. You're just going to where the answers are, and those answers are in those communities. These people know exactly what they need.
That's exactly right.
To make this work. Mm-hmm. Speaking of innovation, you have something called the New Ventures Fund, which mm-hmm. is made up of philanthropic capital, sort of your mm-hmm. R&D arm, if you will.
Yes.
Anything there with any mm-hmm. real promise that mm-hmm. you're excited about?
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, we've used that New Ventures Fund as research and development for us to expand water credit into new geographies, new parts of the world mm-hmm. where we have to adjust the model and do things
differently. How many nations are you in now?
We're in about 17 countries now. And so we can expand geographically with that. We can use that New Ventures Fund to like get into more digital finance, right? So there's a lot that's happening in developing countries with respect to reducing the transaction cost of these loans. Instead of having a loan collector go around on a bicycle every week and collect, you know, cash from these borrowers, looking into kind of digital finance where they can have electronic accounts and make that happen. And, you know, we wouldn't have water equity as a new organization in a spinoff if we hadn't had the New Ventures Fund.
Right.
Because water equity was incubated inside of water.org and until it was ready to spin off as a separate fund investment manager.
You really believe in market-based solutions, but from a philanthropic perspective, has it been a challenge mm-hmm. to get people interested in financially supporting a cause that in most cases they've mm-hmm. never really actually witnessed?
Yeah, it has been a challenge, but I really believe that tide is turning. I think that most people in the United States have never really been thirsty. I mean, we've been thirsty if we're out for a run or something like that, but we've never experienced, like, you know, gut-wrenching thirst. Or, you know, if we have a child that has diarrhea, you know, it's just kind of a thing that happens. It mm-hmm. passes in a couple of days and goes on. And so, you know, it's so different for people if that all of a sudden becomes life-threatening. So it's people are starting to wake up to this, I think, are responding more to water and sanitation needs from the top down, but also from the bottom up, mm-hmm. and the grassroots donors are beginning to respond.
You know, I mentioned in the opening the cause-related marketing program you have with Stella Artois. Provide us with some more details of how that promotion works and maybe mm-hmm. also of some of your other corporate partnerships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've been really fortunate with the Stella Artois relationship. We've been really fortunate with IKEA Foundation, MasterCard Foundation, Caterpillar Foundation. We've really struck a chord with a lot of different
corporate
foundations. Absolutely, and they've been fantastic. And you know, our model resonates with them, you mm-hmm. know, the bottom-up and the market-based solution. And with Stella in particular, you mentioned the Super Bowl commercial. That was an opportunity not to really promote Stella Artois or water.org itself, but it was to draw attention to this crisis so that more people can respond. And people need, you know, some people just need a very simple way to get involved. And if you can go out and buy, you know, a Stella Artois chalice and it gets safe water to someone for 5 years, then that's a pretty good deal. And that promotion actually runs through the middle of April. So when people pick up a 12-pack, you know, that helps people get a year's worth of clean drinking water.
Sounds pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the work culture you've built at water.org and maybe mm-hmm. one or two things that you think makes it a very special and mm-hmm. a distinctive place to work.
Well, it is. It's, you know, we get so many people wanting to work for us, and that's a great thing. You know, whenever we post a job opening, we get tons of applications. And the culture is one of service, and it's also one of innovation. And what, you know, what I refer to sometimes is boldness with humility, right? So we have to be bold in terms of, you know, finding that next innovation. What is the next water credit? What's the next water equity? So the culture is such that we, and I mentioned before, you know, we see ourselves as much as an innovation organization as a water organization, because when you see a crisis that's so massive and you see that the status quo is like drilling one more well and incrementalism, you have to take a step back and say, if we really are in this to solve the crisis, we can't just keep drilling another well. We have to rethink fundamentally how this works. We need to be social entrepreneurs in this pursuit. And that's what we've done. I mean, not you don't bump into too many nonprofits that have an R&D fund, for instance, that's dedicated towards this. And so the culture is one of always pushing, looking for new ideas, testing those. And, you know, I'm an engineer. I like evidence, right? So we test, but, you know, things don't work, we move on. But if they work, we build the evidence base so that we can make the compelling case to donors and investors that this approach works.
Let me close with this, Gary. We had a fellow on the show a couple of months ago by the name of Louis Rosenberg. He's the CEO of Unanimous AI. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they deploy people in sort of this swarming technique, and then they use algorithms, and they actually come up with very, very good answers, better than an individual would. Well, the assignment they had was Jeff Bezos asked, what should he do with his billions of dollars? And they use Unanimous AI and swarming and algorithms, and the number one answer was make sure that everybody on Earth has access to clean drinking water, something which I'm sure you would agree with. Were you surprised by that? And do you believe that that actually will become a reality in your lifetime?
You know, I was surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if it came out like in the top five or something like that, because it's such a wide net that, that they cast. But it speaks to how much people have been tuning into this issue and having local water crises around the world, whether it's, you know, in Southern California or whether it's in Sao Paulo, Brazil, or now Cape Town. And so it's much more in the consciousness of people in water quality and how we're taking care of the environment. So that doesn't surprise me that it came out in the top five, but the top one, yes. But we absolutely can solve this in our lifetime. There is no doubt. I mean, we've known how to make water safe for more than 100 years, you know, here in the United States. And as I mentioned, the capital is already there. We don't need to go out and raise $1 trillion in philanthropy to make this happen. We just need to kind of rearrange the money that's already on the table by providing these nudges to the system as opposed to trying to fundraise our way out of it.
Well, Gary White, the co-founder and CEO of Water.org, thanks so much for being here this evening. Tell us about your website, what listeners may find there, and how they can help support this work.
Yeah, so we do need that philanthropic capital to continue to push us forward, so people can come to water.org and make a donation and help fuel water credit. They can also, later this year, they'll be able to make a loan as little as $100 to fund a water credit investment fund going forward. So we need all hands on deck. We need people showing up with the donations as well as the investment capital.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Gary. It was a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Denver.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.